Hey, welcome to Coaching for Pastors, the Coaching for Pastors podcast. This is episode 2. Today, our guest is Greg Atkinson. Greg is with the firstimpressionsconference.com, and that conference is coming up. It's a virtual conference, 140 speakers, a wealth of stuff for your greeters, your ushers, your first impressions people, your guest services people, your parking lot people. There's going to be a wealth of stuff at this First Impressions Conference, and Greg is giving it to the listeners of the 200 Churches podcast, which I've been doing for almost 8 years, and this new podcast, Coaching for Pastors. If you simply go to the firstimpressionsconference.com, firstimpressionsconference.com, use the promo code 200, and you're going to get 50% off. It is the largest discount he's offering to any group, and he's doing it specifically for small church pastors through the 200 Churches podcast and Coaching for Pastors. I'm really grateful. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. This is a one-hour conversation I have with Greg. Hey, you got to listen to this. And you, if you have to listen to it in 5 or 6 settings, listen to it. He lays down some good stuff, and I was picking it up, and it was really challenging. And I appreciate the time that Greg gave us. So again, episode 2, here we go. My conversation with Greg Atkinson from firstimpressionsconference.com. Greg Atkinson, welcome. You are the second guest on the Coaching for Pastors podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on this podcast. Was honored a couple times I was on the 200 Churches podcast, and I think I was early on there as well, but I'm glad to be a part of this new venture.
Yeah, Greg, you were literally on episode 25 and episode 212.
Cool.
And I want to know, you've got on your website, gregatkinson.com, you've got a post dated in August that kind of lists out all of the podcasts you've been on recently. I want to know if ours was your first podcast recording. It would have been June of 2013.
I'm not sure. I mean, I've been around podcasts a long time. I used to host a pretty popular podcast in 2007 called the Creative Synergy Podcast.
It was Ooh.
Me and Anthony Coppedge, and we had a large following and a lot of sponsors. And
well, that's back when there were only like 18 podcasts.
Right, right. Yeah.
2007.
2007, we recorded it in a studio in Dallas. It was edited by a professional editor, and
wow,
we had sponsors, and we had a large following. And I still have those in my library. I don't think they're on iTunes anymore, but I have them in my iTunes library that I can listen to. But they were some good episodes. It's called Creative Synergy, Greg Atkinson and Anthony Coppedge. But
cool.
But yeah, I've been on podcasts for a long time. But yours was definitely earlier than most, because now it's a pretty popular thing.
Yeah.
Great resource. Yeah.
What was the podcast that the Saddleback Youth Ministry had, that Doug Fields had, right about that same time, back in 07?
Right.
Do you remember that one?
Probably Purpose Driven something, I would guess.
Well, they did one. They did a video. It was a video podcast on iTunes.
Simple Youth.
Yeah, it was back when you would go onto iTunes, you go to podcasts, then you could choose video or audio.
Okay.
Which you can't even do, like they don't even have technically like video podcasts anymore. But Doug Fields and Matt and Josh were the guys that were on that early, and man, that thing was so funny and so entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched it literally every week. It was a riot. You and your partner were even recording back then. That's 13 years ago.
Yep.
Wow. Well, hey, it's good to have you on today. And right at the outset here, I just want to talk about something that you've got coming up. It's your First Impressions Conference, and you said that this is your fourth year for this.
Yeah, this is our fourth conference, and I am actually today sitting in my office, and I've got a couple things going on throughout this day. This is a weekend that we're recording this, but I'm working with my admin on our team to come up with the conference notebook that we'll give attendees for this year that they can take notes and
nice.
Really cool, nice downloadable PDF conference notebook. Working with her on that. I've already had one phone call with my video editor who sent me day one's full 7 hours of video. Sent me day one. I found a couple mistakes, called him, said, here's what needs to change. And so he's going to tweak that before he goes on to day two and three. And then I have been emailing back and forth with my web developer who is working on the May 2021 conference website, because at the end of this year's First Impressions Conference, our fourth conference in November 4th through 6th of 2020, we're going to announce our May 2021 one-day conference. And so juggling a lot of things because we're editing this year's conference. We're working on a schedule to put on the website. We're working on a conference notebook. And then my web side of things is working on next year's lineup. And we've got 12 of 14 speakers confirmed. And so on the website that I can see behind the scenes that's not public and nobody else can see it, I can see 12 headshots. And then we're waiting for two more to be confirmed. I wish I could say, because you would love to hear who they are, but I can't say yet because they're not confirmed. But
Hey, Greg, after I push the record button, we're not recording anymore. You can tell me them all in secret.
I will. But yeah, we're juggling a lot right now because we're doing two conferences a year going forward, a spring and a fall. So we're working on the late fall November conference that comes out, and we're working on the spring so that we can announce it this fall. A lot of stuff happening.
Very cool. So you are nothing if not administrative, correct?
Right.
That's perfect. I wish you could just loan me, you know, at times some of your administrative acumen. That's not necessarily my forte. Everything that I do administratively, I have to work at it. I have to do it on purpose. None of it is second nature to me. So that is really nice. Hey, today we're just starting. I'm just getting this Coaching for Pastors podcast off the ground. And you are a great person to talk to because you have been coached as a pastor and as a small church pastor, but you've also coached other pastors. Absolutely. So you reminded me about something from way back in 2013 that you shared with us, and you talked about your coaching relationship with Dave. Why don't you just bring that up and talk about that just for a minute?
Yeah, I was a small church pastor in a small town, a town of about 13,000. We were a church of about 125 people. I followed Dave Jacobs and was in some of his stuff online, and reached out to him to be my coach because he coaches small church pastors. And so we had a working relationship for a year, and he really helped me. And I learned a lot as a coach because I've been coaching and consulting since 2005, so 15 years.
Wow.
I learned a lot from him going through the coaching process. It's just like I say, everybody should go to counseling, even counselors. And I also believe that coaches should be coached and learn about it. But I worked with Dave, had a great experience. And so when I was on that first podcast with you guys, I just mentioned, hey, I have a coach that coaches small church pastors, and told you guys about Dave Jacobs. And then I personally coach small church pastors as well, and don't have as much time as I used to because it's a pretty heavy investment, but I do enjoy doing it and get a lot of sweet reward and joy from coaching pastors.
I want to talk to you about two topics that we talked about before I hit record. You were talking about the COVID-19 and how it's impacting our churches, and then the reopening process for churches. So as you're talking to church leaders, what is the major impact that churches are experiencing from your perspective because of the virus and because of everything we've been going through as a country?
I think a lot of pastors are tired and weary. A lot of studies show that. Burned out, discouraged. And I think one of the reasons they're discouraged is because not everybody has come back. If you look at studies, whether it be Glue or Barna or Lifeway, they show that out of all of the churches that have reopened, and all throughout the country, there are several churches that have reopened, including my own. I'm a part of a small church plant of 50 people on a good day. Out of all churches that have opened across the country, the average nationally, every poll shows it, is 30% come back, which means you are missing 70% of your congregation. 70% of those faces you're not seeing. And that includes myself. I haven't gone back to my home church. And so I had dinner last week with my pastor, who's one of my best friends, a small church pastor, and he said that last week they had 18 people. And so, again, typically we would have 50. If we were really booming, it would be 60 people. We're inner city church plant, and he said they had about 18 last week. And I watched online on Facebook Live. When you meet in person, you want to remember that that audience that you built up during March and April and the early days of COVID, where everybody had to switch and pivot and go online, a lot of them are still watching online, and we don't want to forget them. We don't want to exclude them. We don't want to shame them. A lot of people have some real health concerns. My mom is a survivor of breast cancer. She just had chemotherapy and radiation and surgery. She has no immune system. She can't be out in public. She's a dedicated, committed core member of her church, but she can't be around people because of her weak immune system. I have two children with weak immune systems. I was sick last year. This time last year, I was at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota undergoing treatment. And so my immune system is compromised. And so I have to be careful who I'm around and what I do and where I go and take a lot of precautions. As much as I miss gathering together with my local congregation, it's just not safe right now. And a lot of it, actually, you know, if you want to know the truth of it, it's because so many people don't take social distancing and safety precautions seriously. I have watched on Facebook Live and I've seen people with no mask hugging each other and talking to each other up close. And so for me at home, sitting, watching, looking at Facebook Live, I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to go there. They're talking face to face with no mask. And so a lot of it is just pastors not enforcing safety measures. And because somebody posted in a, we have a local Facebook group for restaurants in my city. I live in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and it's called Rock Hill Eats. The South Carolina governor just posted that, or just mandated that, not mandated, but just allowed restaurants in South Carolina to open at 100% capacity. They had been at 50% capacity. And when you went into a restaurant, every other booth or every other table was roped off or marked off, and you couldn't sit. You had to social distance. And so restaurants were functioning at 50% capacity. And this Mexican restaurant that I like posted after the governor spoke yesterday, posted in Rock Hill Eats, hey, we're at 100% capacity now. Come out and join us. And I commented, no thanks. And you could see all these reactions. There's so many people that do not want to risk their health. And, you look at what happened this past week with the White House administration and the Republican gathering that happened on the White House lawn a week ago. Last Saturday, they had a gathering for the confirmation of the new Supreme Court justice. And there was a lot of leaders that were gathering together without masks. And I think the latest list is 25 got COVID. That's including Governor Chris Christie, Donald Trump, Melania Trump, Kellyanne Conway, all these senators, the RNC chair, the president of Notre Dame, White House reporters, 11 staffers. So 25 people hanging out close face-to-face without masks got COVID, and it's spreading. And so when you look at the news, it's going up in most states. And I understand that we live in a big country. In some places, it's not as bad as others. There's a few states that are on decline, but most it's going up. And so we have to keep continuing steadfast with these safety precautions, because my passion is hospitality and first impressions and guest services and welcoming the stranger, which includes loving our neighbor. And I think the best way that we can love our neighbor is to set up safety precautions and to enforce them. My own small church that I'm a member of, they have masks there at the door when you walk in. They have hand sanitizer. They're just not enforcing it. And that's where I think there's some leadership issues that I would address if I was coaching. I know this is a coaching podcast.
Greg, let me jump in here, because you've kind of you've let us know where you're at in a couple areas. And I would say most particularly is that you are motivated by having church environments where people can not only feel safe, but where they can actually be safe, because loving our neighbor is an action-oriented thing. It's not just saying it,
right,
but it's actually doing it. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, because you're saying that it's a leadership issue, and this is great. I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't know where you were going to go with this, so I'm glad you brought it up like this. If it's a leadership issue and you're the pastor of a church of, let's just say, 100, and you know that you've got people in your church kind of on both sides of the political spectrum and both sides of the mask thing and the whole sensitivity thing. Some people are not sensitive at all, and other people are like really hypersensitive. How do you go about, as a pastor of a small to average sized church, how do you go about addressing that? You just stand up on Sunday morning and issue the edict? Or is there a process that you would encourage a pastor to go through?
Yeah, you know, I have two large Facebook groups. They equal about 22,000 people. And we get into some pretty big heated discussions in my Facebook groups, weekend worship and guest services. We talk about this a lot. But I remember I spoke 8 years at the Moody Bible Pastors Conference, training pastors from around the world. And I remember telling a pastor one time to cut his Sunday night service. He said he had 300 people that came on Sunday morning and 30 that came on Sunday night. And I said, kill Sunday night.
Yep.
And he said, how can you say that? He said, that's hard. I said, who told you leadership was easy? I wrote a free ebook that's been downloaded 100,000 times. You can get it on my website, gregatkinson.com. It's called Church Leadership 101. It's a free ebook. I've got emails all around the world from pastors that have read it and were looking for free resources where they didn't have to pay anything. But it's a free resource, Church Leadership 101. But this is Church Leadership 101. I believe in science, and so I throw that out there. But I also want to love our neighbor. And so where I think there's been this great change that I hope will come in the next weeks is we have shown that it's no longer a political issue, because that list I just read off to you of what happened last week in the White House garden when Republicans got together and met, and 25 of them so far have been confirmed COVID positive. It doesn't discriminate whether you're Republican or Democrat, and I'm neither one, I'm independent, but it doesn't discriminate whether or not you vote red or blue. All of those red leaders, senators, White House staff, president, first lady, all came down. White House aide all came down with COVID. So it doesn't discriminate. And so we can throw politics out and let's just say, hey, it's a pandemic. It's a disease that's growing and spreading and on the rise in 26 states. And let's use precautions and let's use safety. And so when I started speaking out about this back in March in my Facebook group, I got a lot of pushback, and I got people that would argue and say, well, what do you say to somebody that says, I'm not wearing a mask? You know, you say we're going to require a mask at church. And what do you say when somebody says, well, I don't want to wear a mask? I say, well, what would you say to somebody that says, I'm going to smoke in the auditorium? You would say, no, you're not allowed to smoke in the auditorium. You have to go outside. Or if somebody was being disruptive or came in intoxicated, which I have experienced as a small church pastor, where somebody came in drunk to a service, or somebody that wanted to smoke inside. And we, at our small inner city church plant, have people that smoke right outside the doors, which is a horrible first impression as a first impression.
Yeah, right.
Right there in the doors when you walk in the entrance smoking, because we have a lot of recovering addicts. You know, if somebody were to say, can I smoke in an auditorium? I would say no. And so if they say, can I not wear a mask? I would say, no, you need to wear a mask. It's not just about you. It's about others. It's protecting people like my mom that have no immune system and my kids that have a weakened immune system. It's protecting others. It's loving our neighbor. You know, we for years have hypothesized and philosophized and, or that's not a word.
Philosophize.
So we have theoretically thought about what would it mean when the Bible says love our neighbor. Well, now you have a tangible way to do it. Social distance, wash your hands, wear a mask, and keep others safe, because you don't know if you're asymptomatic. You don't know if you're spreading it. obviously somebody got to the president of the United States that did not realize they were COVID positive. They were probably asymptomatic. And so, because I doubt they would let anybody coughing and feverish get near the president. And so somehow it got spread. And so all that is to basic science to understand that it's a virus and it goes where it wants to go. I'm in Charlotte, the Charlotte Metro. So we used to have a very famous quarterback named Cam Newton, who is now the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Today's news came out that says Cam Newton tested positive for COVID. Cam is not exempt. You know, the virus does not discriminate. So now that and another, I think it was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game got canceled because of players testing positive for COVID. And so it's just we have to just sit back and say, okay, we're in a crazy year. 2020 has been crazy. We're in a pandemic. There's wildfires happening in California. It's disrupted life from all of my friends on the West Coast and in Oregon, like Dave and others. It's a crazy year. How can we shepherd and lead and guide people through this? You know, the weight of leadership is a heavy thing. So to think through how can we lead best and set the best example and shepherd our people. And sometimes, like in a lot of cases, it means not meeting in person. There are so many churches that have opened up and closed back down because they had a COVID outbreak, including my own church. My pastor, my pastor's wife, my pastor's son, and my pastor's cousin all got COVID after opening back up. When I got together last week to have dinner for my birthday and his birthday, which are pretty close, to celebrate our birthdays together last week at a Mexican restaurant, this is on the other side of him having gone through COVID and his wife gone through COVID and his son gone through COVID and his cousin. And so I remember he called me and he said, "Hey, we've got COVID. What do you think we should do?" I said, "Shut down." He said, "Well, I don't know. I need to talk to the elders. I don't know how they'll feel about that." I said, "Friend, there are churches all over the country that I see in my weekend worship and guest services group that are shutting down because they had a COVID outbreak. I said, you need to keep people safe, go back online and shut down for a season." And so they did that. And then they now have since opened back up, even though I'm not, you know, going in person. But because the thing is, I'm one of those people, if I got COVID, I would be really, really deathly sick because of pre-existing conditions. And so I have to really watch it. It's important to me.
So you've given us rationale and you've kind of given us a philosophy, but you, like in the debates, you did not answer my question, Greg. Let me ask it again.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So, no, that's all right. That's all right. What is the first thing a pastor should do when they realize they're in a church? A lot of people don't want to wear masks. Some have even said, if I have to wear a mask, I'm not coming. Give the first four steps a pastor should take in leading his church in that direction.
Well, I thought I answered it, but I'll try again. I would say lead by example, wear a mask.
Okay.
Require people wear a mask. I can't tell you how many times I have walked into an establishment, whether it be a store or a restaurant, and they had a simple sign on the door that said masks are required for entry. It was that simple. They just put a sheet of paper, taped it to the door that said mask required for entry. And I thought, well, that's not hard. They just laid it out pretty simple. If you want to come in,
okay,
you have to wear a mask.
So when they do those first two things, they lead by example, and then they require a mask, and then half the church rises up in protest, and then a third of them actually just come in without a mask anyway, then what does the pastor do?
Yeah, it's going to happen. You know, I was a pastor for 2 decades. I was telling somebody recently stories about the old days back when I was being coached by Dave Jacobs. I was at a small campus of a multi-site church in a small town, and our church had 3 campuses. They were 125 people when I took it over. They were 550 when I left 2.5 years later. When I came there and I started making hard decisions and hard calls, what I did not realize until we started doing some generosity work and some giving work and looking at different resources like the Rocket Company, is that the 3 biggest givers in the entire church out of 3 campuses went to my campus, the 3 biggest givers. And I ticked all of them off. because I don't make decisions based on money, and I'm not going to let people push me around. And so there was a case where the a big giver said that we had a marquee sign, a sign outside in front of the church, and he wanted to put these cheesy sayings on them. You know, those sayings that you see that Ed Stetzer would make fun of.
Like seven days without prayer makes 1 week.
Yes. All these funny, cheesy church sign sayings. And I said, no, we're going to use it more strategically. We're going to put service times up there and series titles and things like that. We're going to use it in a serious way. And so he got upset and he started giving to the main campus. He didn't give to our campus anymore. And so he wasn't a part of my budget anymore. He got upset and started giving to the main campus. The biggest giver out of the entire church, and this is a mega church total combined with three campuses. It's a mega church, the largest church in that region. The biggest giver out of them all was involved and was a leader at my church, and he was leading a men's ministry, which on the surface looks great, but it wasn't part of our mission. It wasn't part of our vision. And so I killed it. I cut it. I axed it. I killed it. And he met with me, and he was very upset. He let me know he was upset. He let me know how much he gives. And I had the paperwork and knew that he was the number one giver in a church of 2,200. I sat down and I just talked it out with him. And I told him my heart for Jesus and my heart for reaching the unchurched. And I said something that I talk about in my book, Church Leadership Essentials. I said, if you ever doubt a decision I made, I want to tell you something that an old boss and mentor of mine told me, and that's always assume the best in others. Always assume the best in others. I am making this decision for a good reason. Assume the best. Unless I go out and defy scripture or do something contrary to the will of God, understand that I am hearing from God, I'm following God, and I'm seeking what's best in the interest of all people. I said, would you give me that, the benefit of the doubt, to assume the best? And he said, yes, I'll do that from now on. And he became one of my biggest supporters. And we never did that ministry again. We killed it. But he never left the church and was a huge supporter. But I had to sit down. I've always said that leaders need to be able to communicate in three ways. Large group, like from the pulpit, small group, whether it be a small group of leaders or a core group of leaders to communicate vision to, and one-on-one, where you sit down with somebody at a coffee shop or over breakfast or lunch in a restaurant, and you talk to them about, hey, I need you. You tap them on the shoulder. I need you to be with me as I make this decision. And so as I coach small church pastors, I was telling you off the air, there's a local pastor here in South Carolina I coached. His church doubled in size in a year. And there's another pastor I coach in New Jersey. His church doubled in size in a year. And what's important about that, when I think about this pastor in New Jersey, whose church doubled in size, that is counting all the people that left, all the people that got upset and left because of decisions that he made, including changing the name of the church and a lot of vision and direction type stuff. But leadership is not easy. If it was, we wouldn't need coaches. And that's what's so great about having this podcast where you can help people. The reason we need coaches is we need somebody like Moses to hold our arms up and to say, it's okay, keep going. It's okay, keep going. That's what coaching is. It's telling somebody, I've got your back. I believe in you. No, you're not crazy. You can do this. Keep pressing on. A lot of my emails I will sign, keep pressing on. And I've been saying that for over a decade. Leadership is not easy, and it's going to take a lot of intentionality, which I talk about a lot in my book, Strange Leadership, the word intentional and intentionality. It's going to take a lot of continued focus in a desired direction of a desired outcome where you want to head and lead the church. If I was pastoring, if I was on staff at my church right now pastoring, I would do the same thing. Dude, you can't come in here if you're not wearing a mask. And if they get upset and leave, they get upset and leave. I have had so many people leave the church. But when I inherited the campus, it was 125. When I left, it was 550 people. And we had built a new building. I understand what it's like to lead through growth and change. And I saw that again, like with the guy who I coached in New Jersey, who doubled in size, but that's counting losing 100 people. But now all those new people are rowing in the same direction. When I coach people, I talk about, imagine if you were in one of those long row boats or like crew, like you see in the Olympics, and you have five guys rowing and one guy's rowing in the opposite direction. You wouldn't get anywhere. Everybody has to be rowing in the same direction. And that's where new members class comes in, newcomers class and membership and things like that, where you get everybody focused on the vision and the mission and you get everybody rowing in the same direction. But it's not easy. And that's why I'm glad we have coaches out there that can encourage us.
Greg, you remind me of a YouTube video of a TED Talk I've seen just recently. I'm going to put it in the show notes for episode 2 of the Coaching for Pastors podcast. And it is about, it's about communication in conflict and the ways to go about it and the three things to remember. And I don't want to pull it up here in front of me right now, but right. It was really good. And I'm going to have that as a link, because what you're talking about is leading by example, instituting the change. And I would add with that, of course, there's communication with other leaders as you institute that change.
Tons of communication.
Yeah, and then the third thing you said is basically confront the naysayers with compassionate communication, where you actually sit down, listen to them, and then have them listen to you and try to come to a resolution.
Yeah.
And you're not always going to come to it, and they may walk out, but ultimately you're saying by doing that, you're weeding out the people that probably sooner or later they're going to leave anyway.
Absolutely.
Just for one thing or another. So in this area of COVID, you started out by saying that 30% of the people have come back on average across the country, and that most pastors are discouraged and tired because of that. As they look at their church, for us now, that makes me thankful, because we've got about 60, maybe a little more than 60% that have returned. That also makes me nervous, because sometimes I look at the room and I say, I feel like there's too many people in the room. And literally just this past week, with our church facilities director, we walked through the auditorium and we re-spaced the chairs.
Good.
You know, they get moved around. And so we re-spaced them and had to make sure they're at least 6 feet. Each little group of chairs is at least 6 feet from every other group. But you said that people are discouraged, pastors are discouraged, 30% of their congregations have come back. How should they be thinking about this? How do you coach pastors in their mindset that this isn't going to go away anytime soon? We're in this for the long haul. How do you help pastors with their mindset for this to try to get past the discouragement?
Yeah, great question. I was on Tom Rainer's podcast a week ago, and he said this. He read it word for word from a piece of paper. He said, Greg, Barna just released a study that if you, like you, Jeff, have 60% of your congregation that has returned, you are in the 8% of all churches in America. 8% of churches in America have 60% of people that have returned.
Wow.
That is how serious this is. It is nationally 30% of people have returned. And so I would say to the pastor, one, to just have that reality check of, no, you're not going to look out and see a packed house or see it the way it used to be in the good old days in February and January.
Right.
It's not going to look like that. However, we have this beautiful thing now of an online audience where we can even reach more people than before in January and February. And so I've done a lot of webinars lately. I did a webinar with Generis. I did a webinar with Chemistry Staffing. I did a webinar with the Malfers Group. I've been doing a lot of webinars helping people think through this reopening stuff in COVID. And I did two webinars with Generis. And one of the things we talked about is that I said, you heard my interview with Kerry Newhoff just recently. We live in a phygital world, which is physical and digital when it comes to church experience, church guest experience. And so, Pastor, when you stand up in front of your congregation, whether it be 30% or if you are blessed to be in the 8% of all churches like Jeff, looking at 60% of your congregation, don't beat yourself up and say, oh my gosh, where's the other 40%? Or oh my gosh, where's the other 70%? thank God for those that are there, pray for those that aren't, and look at the camera. You know, most churches got on board with streaming during this time, whether it be Facebook Live and or YouTube or church online platform or streaming TV, all these streaming church TVs, all these options that came out. I think Outreach had a free one. A lot of options that came out for small churches. Whatever you may be doing, understand, and I said this numerous times, if I were to stand up in front of the congregation, I would say, we are so glad to see you this morning. And then I would look directly at the camera and say, and for all of those of you that are tuning in online, we are so thankful that you're a part of today's worship experience. Thank you for being a part of this Sunday, and acknowledging, you know, I talked about on Carrie Newhoff, the Avatar movie where they said, I see you.
We
need to understand it. And Jeff, you're blessed to be in that 8%. But for those 40% that aren't there and are watching at home, they would love to be there. They just have legitimate fears, concerns, and safety issues. And so your job is to pastor them, to encourage them, to never shame them. I have said this over and over and over.
That's right.
This is not a faith test. This is not if you believed God enough, you would be here at church. Well, what happened this past weekend when those 25 so far, those in White House leadership and senators came down with COVID? It wasn't that they didn't believe God enough. It's that they were exposed to a deadly virus. And it's very highly contagious, much more contagious than the flu. It's not that they're not spiritual enough. It's not that they're not committed. It's not that they're not faithful. They just have, just like my mom, who is recovering from breast cancer, they have legitimate health concerns. My mom would love to go to church. I have no idea how long it's been since she's been to church because of even pre-COVID going through breast cancer. She misses her congregation, and she does stuff on Zoom and online church. There's a lot of people that would love to be there. And so for us as Christian leaders, let's never shame them. Let's never embarrass them. Let's never call them out. I've seen this, unfortunately, and it just makes me cringe where people online say, well, our core will be there, or the faithful will be there. And I'm like, no, you have a lot of core and a lot of faithful that are at home watching. I said that in my own Facebook group. There's a lot of people like me. I'm about as plugged in as you can get to my home church, my small church of 50 people, where you would not believe all the things I have my hands in. But I have not walked through the doors of the church since February, and we're recording this in October. And so it's not that I'm not committed. It's that I have to protect my health and my kids. I see the same thing with my mom. And so I would encourage pastors to embrace the digital world. From now on, when you stand up to preach, you have people watching through a camera at home on their laptop, their phone, or their television. They are watching through a screen, and you have to pastor them as well. You have to address them as well. You have to acknowledge them as well and find ways for them to plug in. And yes, ideally, it'd be great if they came again in person. And the thing I keep telling people is, folks, it's not going to be like this forever. In a year, there'll be a vaccine. COVID will have diminished. It'll be back to whatever the new normal is. But we'll be back in person, and we'll be back out eating in restaurants and going to the movie theater and going to football games and baseball games. I would love to go to a baseball game right now. I would love to go to a football game right now. I would love to be to see a real crowd at the NBA finals. We're just not in that season. But that the reason when we planned this year's First Impressions Conference, we landed on the theme, navigating a new season, not new normal, like a term you've heard a lot, not new normal, because this isn't our new normal. COVID will go away. Things will get back better. Life will be safe. We won't always have to wear a mask. Things will get back to better. So I say that to encourage you. So when we plan this year's First Impressions Conference, we've talked about navigating a new season. There are seasons in the Christian life, and there are seasons in the life of a church. this is something we'll look back on and say, do you remember how wild 2020 was? And do you remember how we saw who was really with us and who departed when we said, we need you to wear a mask? I mean, to leave the mission of a church over a mask just blows my mind.
Greg, do you think that, like some are saying, that it's never going to go back to pre-COVID numbers? Do you agree with that or do you disagree with that?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, Tom Rainer said that. He said 20% of your pre-COVID attendance will never return. Tom Rainer coaches a lot of small churches. I agree that a lot of people, you know, even pre-COVID, Jeff, pre-COVID, when you looked at Andy Stanley and Kerry Newhoff and those that have been talking about measuring engagement, not measuring attendance, we had people that would attend once or twice a month. Once or twice a month. That's the way it is nationally and in North America, across the board for all churches. Most people attend twice a month, like every other week. It's great when you get people involved serving and they become more regular and maybe come three or four times a month, but that's not the norm. That's not normal. And so going forward, there may be people that got a taste of online church and watching a service in their pajamas, drinking coffee on their couch and said, you know what? I like this. I think I'm just going to tune into the broadcast this morning. You know, that's just probably part of the reality.
There's that. But so we may lose 20%.
Right.
But then with that 20% gone, likely they weren't, I don't know, can I say this? They weren't as committed. Right? Because they just decided, well, I've kind of gotten out of the habit and I'm just not going to go back, right, even though the danger is gone. So that means you should have a leaner, meaner machine to even reach more people. But to say that we're not going to see the same attendance numbers, I don't know that they mean that they're not all coming back. It sounded like a lot of, when I hear that, they're saying that, you know, if you had this attendance in the past, just kiss it goodbye. You're not going to have that kind of attendance in the future. And I think it's still up to each church how it's going to reach its community, and that you could still have churches that do a good job reaching their community and find they have good engagement and therefore good attendance.
Yeah, I think it depends on how much you are investing and putting into your digital online presence right now. I was on another podcast the other day with the Church Digital and Jeff Reed and Neil Smith and Jay Cranda, the online pastor at Saddleback. And we were talking about this and we mentioned a church in particular, Transformation Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, with Pastor Mike Todd, and how they've been really investing in digital, really investing online to take it up a notch during this season where they couldn't meet in person. And we all said when they gather back in person, they will explode with growth. If you have invested during this time and it's not a throwaway, it's not a, well, this is pitiful because we can't get together in person. If you have invested in online presence and online services and online ministry, digital ministry, when the time comes to gather back together, I think you will see a boom in growth. I think you will explode with growth. And that's what we all said will happen with Transformation Church in Oklahoma. They're going to explode with growth when they can finally get back together. Saddleback the same way. Rick Warren and those, they're not meeting in person. Elevation Church in Charlotte, where I live here with Stephen Furtick, they're not meeting in person. When they get back in person, they're going to explode because they have heavily invested in the online church and reaching people where they are. And it's always been about reaching people where they are. Just now it's a little bit more real when that includes their home, reaching people in their home.
So the opposite of that, not reaching them digitally right now, how will that keep people from coming back, practically speaking?
Because they've gotten disengaged.
Okay, so it's the engagement. It's the continued engagement through the digital sphere.
Yeah. And then I would say when you talk about the 20%, were they ever really committed, and people that would leave your church over wearing a mask, which just blows my mind. I remember coaching this pastor in New Jersey who before he doubled in size, he was losing and bleeding a lot of people because we were making key decisions for the future of the church. And I was just there to hold him up. I was there to prop him up and stand behind him and say, I got your back. You're not crazy. Keep pushing. I got your back. It's okay. And then the thing that I found myself saying to him again and again and again is let him go, let him go, let them go. Let them go. He would call me up. So-and-so just left. They've been here 40 years. So-and-so just left. They've been here 20 years. So-and-so just left. And I would say, let them go. Let them go. Let them go. Now his church is not only bigger and growing faster, and they just moved into a new building and facility and are doing some unbelievable stuff and led through a name change and all the stuff that we worked on, but they are rowing in the same direction, and they have a lot more momentum, high morale. They had low morale before. Sometimes we don't realize how miserable some people are at church, and the best thing you can do is to let them go. Now they have high morale and high momentum.
Really interesting. Very interesting. So a lot of pastors right now, their wheels are spinning.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I know what I said is controversial. I get that. I know.
Well, I don't know how controversial it is. I think
it's... imagine the comments that will come on this episode because I said people should wear masks to church. I can imagine. I have thick skin. I can take it. But leadership is not for the faint of heart. I said it in my book. It's for the tender of heart, but not for the faint of heart. You have to have thick skin and make hard calls and hard decisions and speak the truth in love. And sometimes it comes to sitting down face to face and saying, Bob, this is why I'm saying this. This is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm changing this. And speaking to people, large group, small group, and one-on-one. That's the best advice I can give leaders. You have to be able to communicate large group from the pulpit and through communication like newsletters and videos. You have to be able to communicate small group to a core team of leaders, and you have to be able to communicate one-on-one where you sit down with somebody over coffee and say, I'm pulling the plug on this ministry and here's why, and I need you to support this and be in my corner. Do you have my back? And have those heart-to-heart moments. I have been there, done it. It's not theory for me. And like I said, when I made some decisions at my church, my small church where Dave was coaching me, and I upset some of the three largest givers in our church. These were millionaires. This is not chump change. These guys owned hotels. One was CFO for a major corporation, national company. These guys lived in mansions. I wasn't playing around. When I said we're going in this direction, no, we're not putting cheesy things on the church sign. No, we're not going to do this men's ministry anymore. It wasn't theory for me. These guys were millionaires that lived in mansions, but you have to have thick skin and a tender heart.
So when would you go after people? When would you not let them go? Give an example of when you should go after somebody.
I don't know that I ever have.
Come on. You got to have one, Greg.
I have to really think about, I've met with people and I've said, I'm available to talk or let's sit down and talk this out. But this is a gut check for the American church to see if they are really committed to the cause and committed to the mission of the church and their community, or if they let little trivial things trip them up. And it's kind of a sifting of the wheat and the tare, finding out who's really committed. You know, when we went from 125 to 550, a lot of people left during that. I remember one staff member left, went on staff at Life Church, came back, and he said, I want to stand up and say something one day and do the announcements. And I said, you do realize nobody knows who you are, right? And he said, what do you mean? I said, this is a totally different church than when you left. Nobody knows who you are. The church was constantly growing and evolving and changing. People were leaving and people were coming, but the people that were coming were on board with the vision and the mission, and we could row in the same direction. And momentum, I learned it years ago, momentum is everything when it comes to leading a church, being able to. You can get away with a lot, Jeff, when you have momentum. You can get away with some really tough decisions when you have momentum.
So, Greg, momentum allows people to be looking forward and not looking backwards, correct? And that's why you can make changes and you can move quickly with momentum, because people aren't looking backwards. They're looking in a visionary way to the future.
Yeah, and I would add to that, they're looking at the God stories. They're looking at life transformation. They're looking at baptisms. They're looking at changed lives. This is why it's so crucial. You know, when I work with the pastor, we're together for a year. When it is so crucial that you communicate stories of life change, that you highlight and spotlight, you know, my small church plant that I'm a part of, inner city church plant of 50 people, we have been spotlighted and highlighted by the South Carolina Baptist Convention so many times in the last year. And they have shown videos of us baptizing people and videos of homeless people that got jobs and got homes and got cars and addicts that have recovered and pagans that have become Christ followers. We are telling stories of life change, and we're communicating that via video, via Facebook, via email. We are telling stories of life change, and the South Carolina Baptist Convention has been spotlighting us everywhere you look, showing people, look at what this little church of 50 people is doing and how God is moving. And so when I talk about momentum, I'm not talking about if you have a church of 5,000, we're a church of 50 people, but all the churches in South Carolina know about us because of what is happening and what God is doing. And so it's making people aware. I've said for years, a lot of times we as staff members get the emails, we get the texts, we get the calls, we know somebody that made a decision for Christ, and we celebrated a staff meeting, but we don't always let others know, let our volunteers and our team members know. I served for a season at Elevation here in Charlotte, and they were such a celebratory culture of, you would not believe what God did last week in our services. You would not believe this story of life change. You would not believe this person who came for the first time and what they said. And they were always highlighting what God was up to. And people, you know, Jeff, one of the biggest bestsellers of all time is The Search for Significance. We have one life. Hmm. We want it to count. We want it to matter. People want to be a part of something that is eternal, eternal impact, something that matters. And so if The Search for Significance was such a bestseller, it tells you as a leader that people want to give. They're very busy. They work a full-time job. They lead a family. They don't have a lot of time to volunteer. They don't have a lot of financial resources to give. They want to be a part of something that matters. And it's your job to communicate to them what God is up to in your community.
That is awesome, Greg. That's awesome. And I am glad for the pastors who are listening, because you've given just a whole lot of inspiration and good reminders too, because some of these things we know, but we don't know them in the front of our brain. We don't know them in front of us. We know them from the past. So it's good to be reminded of those things. And you've given, it's interesting, you talk about being, so you're a Southern Baptist church plant?
Yep.
So you're with the Southern Baptist, but you're talking about wearing masks, right? So in society, people would see those two things as an anomaly. And so you're being normal. You're trying to be normal with people and just to be honest. And hopefully that challenges some of our pastors. I know it's challenged me to look at their church people and say, how can I lead this group with integrity and with love and with the kind of leadership Jesus would give?
The other thing, Jeff, being a first impressions guy that leads a first impressions conference with a first impressions background. And, you know, I consult churches from 100 people to 35,000. I work with the largest, fastest growing churches in the country. I travel every other weekend. I'm gone twice a month when it's not COVID season. I understand what it's like to work with fast growing organizations. And there's things that I see over and over and over. But when it comes to first impressions in the COVID era, in this weird year of 2020, nothing will kill your momentum and your morale and your name and your community quicker than negative PR. This is the such and such church that had a COVID outbreak. They didn't wear masks. They didn't social distance. And we all know the media can be very negative to Christians and Christianity and churches. They are looking for stories to put us down. Let's not give them excuse. If a media outlet can say such and such church did not social distance, they didn't wear masks, and now there was a COVID outbreak and half the church has COVID, they will play that over and over and over. And as a first impressions guy, it is very hard to get over negative PR like that. And so we have liability issues. We have PR realities. If you do not want to be, quote, that church, the church that had the outbreak, then step up and lead your people through this tough time. It won't last forever. We won't always have to social distance. We won't always have to wear masks. But for this season, remember, we're talking about navigating a new season. For this season, they need to look to you to lead them and guide them and to step up to the plate.
Greg, navigating this new season, and I love the fact that you say it's not the new normal, because I don't think it's a new normal either.
Right.
But speaking of that, you've got the First Impressions Conference coming up. Why don't you share information with our listeners? And I know you're going to give a code for a different podcast, but that's my podcast too, so we'll use it and we'll go with it.
Absolutely. So we have the First Impressions Conference. If you go to firstimpressionsconference.com, the First Impressions Conference this year in November of 2020 features 120 speakers, the biggest lineup we have ever had. Not only small church pastors and medium church pastors, but we have Mark Batterson, we have Rick Warren, we have Bob Goff, we have Kerry Newhoff, we have Jeff Henderson. We're going to hear from all kinds of leaders talking about navigating a new season and how they have navigated their church. Rick Warren is speaking about reaching your community when your community won't come to you, because Saddleback is not meeting in person. And so fresh talk from Kerry Newhoff about navigating in a new reality, navigating in a new season. 120 speakers, the biggest conference we've ever had, because we wanted to give you the most bang for the buck. I said this on a podcast yesterday. Our regular price ticket costs less this year than it did last year. Last year, we had 40 speakers. This year, we have 120 speakers. Three times the work, three times the editing, three times that we have to go through on the back end and juggling these 120 speakers. But we wanted to give you as much practical training as possible. And I call it the training and inspiration event of the year, because these people are going to encourage you. And so for your group, because we know a lot of your pastors, pastor small churches, we used to do small church scholarships when we'd have sponsors that would offer that. But what we're going to do is offer the promo code 200, which is not the words, it's the numbers, 200, promo code 200, promo code 200 will get you 50% off. It's the biggest discount we have ever given, ever. We have people that are sharing about the conference that have promo codes for $10 off, and the most we've ever done is $20 off, but 50% off is $100. The normal price ticket is $199. And then we have a smaller get your foot into the door live ticket that is $99. So that means for $49, for $50, you can watch 120 speakers. So you could do the lowest option at $99 and get 50% off if you want, or you could do the higher option and get the digital archives later to watch on demand. But it's promo code 200. Promo code 200 will get you 50% off. And this is for small church pastors only, to encourage you and to allow you to get the training that you need. And you don't have to travel. You don't have to get on an airplane. You don't have to rent a hotel. You can stay at home and watch this from the comfort of your own house.
Now, this is how many hours and how many days, Greg?
It's a 3-day conference, 7 hours a day, so 21 hours total of content. That's just what you see with the live pass. If you get the regular ticket, there's about 50 or 60 other speakers that didn't make the live event that are breakouts that you can watch later on demand. So there's no telling how many hours of video content we have put together. You know, it's 120 speakers times however long they talked, but it's a long, long conference of a lot of training that you can watch. And so I will say that if you have never come across the First Impressions Conference before, we have a VIP ticket experience, a VIP experience. It's the most expensive option, but it gives you access to all four conferences archives, all four archives of all four conferences we've done. And it includes a group coaching Zoom call with me, where I'll be coaching you guys as a group. But that 50% code will get you 50% off that most expensive ticket as well. So
nice.
That would be something to think about, because that 50% works across the board.
Thank you so much. And that's coming up again in November?
Yep, a month away.
Very good. Well, we always give, on the 200 Churches side anyway, we've always given our guests an opportunity to have a parting shot. What would you like to leave our pastors with today as you conclude this episode?
Just that it's going to be okay. I know I said a lot of stuff that may affect your sleep, and it may cause you to wrestle with tension. You know, Andy Stanley years ago at the Catalyst Conference said the tension is good. What I said is not easy. It has been lived out in blood, sweat, and tears. I have gone to bed discouraged. I have been to counseling. I have cried to my spouse. I know what it's like to be beat up in ministry. I know what it's like to be hurt by the church. I get that, but it's going to be okay. COVID is not going to last forever. For this season, let's be as safe as possible. Let's love our neighbor. Let's practice social distancing. But realize, as a leader, our job is to see light at the end of the tunnel. Our job is to always be forward-looking. And in the future, we won't always have to wear masks. We won't always have to social distance. We can hug again. So we'll get through this. It, you know, it's that old saying, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. And so we'll get through this. Something that will help you get through this, and I know this personally, as a professional and as a recipient, is coaching. And that's why I'm glad about this podcast. Something that will give you strength that you didn't know you had and lift you up when you're beat up and torn down is to have a coach that has your back and says, you can do it, keep pressing on. And so I would definitely, definitely invest in a coach.
So gregatkinson.com, that's at Kinson, A-T-K-I-N-S-O-N, gregatkinson.com.
Yep.
You can find all of Greg's stuff there and communicate with him there. And Greg, thank you so much. This is our my third time talking to you on a podcast episode. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm deeply honored.
Hey, I love that conversation with Greg Atkinson. And you know what? You got to take the meat and leave the bones, right? Because depending on how you're wired, you may not approach leadership exactly the way Greg does, even though he's got the Leadership 101 at his website, right? GregAtkinson.com. Even though he wrote the Leadership 101 ebook, I want to caution you. Take what he said, apply it where it needs to be applied. Understand that leadership is not for the faint of heart. Like he said, it's for the tender of heart. But maybe you just need to let him go. Maybe you need to let him go. And then maybe you need to give some people, again, I'd caution you, some people, time to understand and time to change and time to grow. And don't be too quick to cut them loose, especially if you're in an area where there's really not another good church around, or there are some churches around, but you'd be concerned about how they would be cared for spiritually. And I know that some of you are in areas where there's just not a lot of good churches, all right? And so people are not going to be leaving quickly. They're not going to be perambulating from one church to the next. So Greg said some great stuff. He challenged me. He challenged me in my leadership. I need to be a little bit more decisive. I need to be a little bit more intentional. And so I appreciate that. But with every guest, they're all going to have a story. They're all going to have a history. I've got one. You've got one. And we're wired in different ways. And so figure out which way that God has wired you and take how God's wired Greg and his words and apply them where they need to be. And where you think, you know what? Maybe you need to reach out to somebody, have a conversation. Maybe you need to go to God in prayer and talk to God about that. Maybe you need to get some wisdom from some wise people in your ministry context. But hey, there it was. There it was. Take it or leave it. My time with Greg, I'm going to take it. I'm going to keep it. I'm probably going to listen to it again. I like listening to these things when I do yard work. I listen to Carrie Newhoff had this 2.5-hour podcast episode with Gordon McDonald. I listened to it on a Saturday. I was cleaning the garage. I was doing the lawn. I was doing all the outside work. And it was great because I listened to him and Gordon McDonald for 2.5 hours. So this was an hour-long conversation. And this Coaching for Pastors podcast is going to be a long form. It's not going to be really short. And you listen to what you want to. You can listen a few times and get through an episode in a week or not. It's going to be up to you. But it's going to be long form. I get a whole lot more out of it when I take the time to communicate, and I loved it. Thank you, Greg Atkinson. And again, the website is firstimpressionsconference.com. The promo code is 200200, and you get 50 stinking percent off. I love that. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today on the Coaching for Pastors podcast. We will see you next week. La semana que viene.